So before I wind up, I just wanted to modify a comment, something I said yesterday, and it was with regard to all you need is access concentration. You know, and you might have completely forgotten about this, so it might not be important to you, but for some people, they might be really interested in this. And we did this, so I said that getting into deep states of absorption is not necessary for this practice, yeah, and I still hold to that. What we practiced yesterday, staying with the in-breath, so connecting, staying with the in-breath, connecting, staying with the out-breath. This connecting and staying is actually us practicing vitakka and vichara. Yeah? Vitakka is initial mental application, and vichara is sustained mental application. So it's you could just say, some teachers teach it as it's aiming and rubbing. So you aim and then you rub. Yeah, or it's framing and lingering. So you make contact and then you stay there. And because this word takka is connected to thinking, many of the commentaries and sources have translated this as initial thinking. This is how I learned it. Initial thinking and sustained thinking, yeah, vitakka and vichara, which are factors of the first dhyana. But there are other teachers and commentaries, Anallio is one of them, you can read up on this in his book, who says it's more about initial and sustained mental application. So your mind touches something and it stays with it. And this is supportive of the practice that we've been doing here, yeah? Bringing together awareness and concentration. And doing this, we're strengthening concentration. So many moments of awareness strengthen concentration. And this ability to stay with one object, yeah, you touch it and you stay with it. This is the kind of mental application that's being talked about here. Vitakka, I always remember it, T for touch, yeah, vitakka. For touch and vichara, that's the staying with. And they are traditionally factors of the first dhyana. But I think rather than getting ourselves too caught up in, oh, how far did I get? Am I a dhyana bunny or not? And I don't do dhyana, or I do, and that's what I want, that's really important to me, is to become familiar with the factors, dhyana factors. Not so much worrying about, am I in the second or third or fourth or whatever, or I'm now in the formless, yeah? But learning the feel of the mind when these qualities are present. Yeah? So when vitakka is present, you know. When vichara is present, you know. So just about that. In Anallio's book on Satipatthana, page 75 to 78, if you want to look it up. So, bringing some threads together, reminding us really, what have we been doing these past 10, 11 days? Well, we've been practicing Satipatthana Sutta, getting to know it, yeah, and we've been practicing continuity of awareness. So awareness has been our thread, whether it's been in formal practice in the shrine room, whether meditation, whether it's been connecting during puja, during our rituals, yeah? Whether it's been eating, being outside with the senses, walking about, whatever. The thread has been just maintaining this presence. Mm-hmm. And if you like, what I called at one point the golden thread, yeah, is like doing this practice, practicing with the eyes of the Buddha. Yeah. So this is applying the teachings to everything. Right view, a dharmic perspective. So awareness alone is not enough. We're bringing in the dharmic perspective. And we've done this with kindly awareness. We've had our afternoons of body scan, sometimes a bit of gentle mindful movement. We've had metta, lots of metta practice, to really encourage us to relax into the experience, step out of struggle, releasing the resistance to the reality of what's there. So here is, a summary, really, of what the practice is. So maintaining steady awareness of changing phenomena by being with your experience in a relaxed, receptive, kindly, non-judgmental way with a sense of wonder. Befriending, moving in closer, being interested in and becoming intimate with what's actually happening. Without grasping, attachment or aversion. So if you could take that with you, this has in it these qualities of clarity. So we're clear about what we're doing. And there is warm, it's not cold analysis. We're not dissecting our experience. It's warm, it's friendly, we're close by, befriending. And it's wise. We've got this element of wisdom here. How are we looking at this with wisdom, knowing it is not me and not mine, knowing it is changing, knowing that clinging to it leads to suffering? And we heard right at the beginning of the retreat, that evening when we had the sutta read out, this is the direct path. This is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four Satipatthanas. So in a way, that's my rendering of the verse in the sutta. Now, with regard to the practice of Satipatthana, how can I do this? How can I apply this? We've gone through the four sequentially. You know, and you will have noticed that the fourth is there all the way along. Yeah, So that's how this is the Dharmic perspective. And one, you can look at first, second, and third fields of experience as a sequence of practices that lead progressively from grosser to more subtle levels. You can look at it like that. Yeah. But the central characteristic of Satipatthana is awareness of phenomena as they are and as they occur. Yeah. That is more in tune with our lives. Yeah. So, aware of phenomena as they are and as they occur. Because all of the Satipatthanas are relevant in our progress along the path, because the practice encompasses all aspects of experience, body, feelings, mind. And you can't separate them off. We do this for the purpose of understanding. Mm-hmm. But in experience, it's not like that. All these lists we have about, the Nidana chain on the wheel of life, it's this, and then it's this, and then it's this. Yeah. Sometimes one can get a bit caught up with thinking one comes after the other. Yeah, but contact and Vedana, they're just so close, so close. The purposes of understanding, we take them apart a little bit. For the purpose of practice, you can also decide, for a while I'll focus on body. Yeah, just get to know that more. For a while I'll focus on Vedana. Mm-hmm. Now, I have phases when I notice I've kind of forgotten that whole area, and then I'll bring that in and have a period of practice, over a few weeks. Vedana, or the mind, exploring the mind. And then go back to this more open awareness. This is what I've been pointing towards with open awareness. You are including whatever occurs at any moment of time, in your experience. Mm. And the four are mutually supportive, in the end, because it's enabling us to become more intimate with experience. To move closer to reality. Then we had a thread of treading in the footsteps of the Buddha. And especially inspired by other women practitioners. Yeah. Early on, we had some verses from the Terigata, and right up to last night, a reading from a wise practitioner of our time. And these women who have just been passing on practice and experience. And I wanted to draw your attention to another woman that hasn't been mentioned. Some of you might have heard of her, you might have read the book, and this is Deepa Ma. Yeah? Deepa Ma, Windhorse has brought out a book about Deepa Ma, the life and legacy of a Buddhist master. So, a lay woman, a woman who had an incredibly difficult and painful life, married off when she was 12. Immediately her husband left the country, went to another country, and she was living with these strangers who were her in-laws. And then at the age of 14, having to leave India, going to Burma, completely new country, 14 years old. Anyway, read the book. But she always had a kind of a yearning for meditation. But her life was so difficult, so painful. Yeah. It took a long, long time for her actually to find the space to do that in her life. She was you know, married at 12, and she had a lot of illness in her life. And in India, it's really important that you produce children. Yeah. And she didn't. They didn't. Yeah. And they really suffered under the pressure of her not producing a child. By the way, they did fall in love, she and her husband. He was very gentle. He was very patient and calm with her. And she said he was her first teacher, really. But at the age of 35, she had a child. Yeah. And then within just a few years, yeah, two of her children died. Yeah, she had three children altogether. Two of them died. Then her husband died. Yeah, so she was left at quite an early age, a widow with one child, very, very ill, yeah, completely consumed by grief and confusion. And really, she thought she was going to die because of, from this grief and confusion. She also had some heart condition. And she just made this resolution to meditate. And she crawls up the stairs, the steps of the temple, to get in there. You know, she's so ill, so weak, but such determination. And she was very encouraging to other women. This is why I'm telling this story about Deepa Ma. And there were women who were not educated, who didn't have time. There wasn't a Buddhist center. Yeah, I think she did then eventually go back to India, to Calcutta. No Buddhist center. There weren't classes. These women couldn't go to classes. So they'd come into her room and she'd give them a teaching on paying attention to the sensations of the baby suckling the nipple when she was breastfeeding. So that's the practice. Yeah, so talk about taking it into daily life. Mm-hmm. I think she's such an inspiration in that respect. So what she was just sharing, her experience and practice, in a way that made it accessible for other women. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit of a leap, and I thought, actually, that's what Tara Loka is doing. Yeah. Tara Loka is making the Dharma accessible to women, whoever they are, wherever they are, coming here on all kinds of levels, and just, yes, yeah, here is the Dharma, you can get to know it. And I just find that impressive. It's so inspiring that that's happening. And I'm honored to be part of this lineage of women practicing the Dharma and passing it on. Mm. And when we go into the shrine room, I'm going to have another reading from yet another woman, Dharma practitioner, who was the abbess of a nunnery. Yeah. But we'll come to that. And we had a thread of inclining our mind to goodness, truth, beauty. So going into the shrine room and just seeing the shrine, so beautiful. That in itself can be enough to just sit and look and relish and cherish that. We've had pujas and rituals, and we've been accompanied by the Buddha, Tara, Padmasambhava, just reminding us, mirroring, this is what's possible for you, for every one of you, for every one of us. I'm going to talk a little bit now about taking the practice home. And then connecting with the world, which really is the theme of today. We're at that place now. So, taking the practice home, before I get into the nitty-gritty of daily life and practice, I wanted to say something about looking for possibilities to digest and integrate and assimilate what we take away from a retreat. I think it's really important to give yourself space in whatever way. Maybe it's just a couple of evenings or a weekend or a day or just time in between to assimilate what you've experienced and what you've learned from a retreat. It's the time after a retreat is so valuable that we don't sort of pack our bags, we pack our notes, and then we go on to the next thing. And life just carries us away. Somehow keeping up what's become alive for you here in your life and taking it further. Because the point of all of this is also it becomes yours, you make it your own, and you take it further. Yeah, digesting, assimilating. And another very, very valuable and I think important way of doing this is going on a solitary. Yeah, you know, I'm not suggesting this next week or next month, but to make that part of your Dharma life, going on solitary, where you could just integrate more deeply something like, say, this retreat or other things you're working with and practicing with in your daily life. Yeah. A solitary where there's no input, you're on your own, yeah, and you have a date every day with yourself. Yeah. So you have your artist's dates, but you've got your own program. And it's about you finding your way with the Dharma, with your Dharma practice. And this is, we really need to do this if we're going to make the Dharma our own and not just feel under pressure to sort of repeat what we've learned or be a good girl doing all the right things. And solitaries are really, really valuable opportunities to do this. And we had an evening here on fearlessness, yeah, and on solitaries. That's where you meet, you know, you might have some experiences of fear there, feeling challenged, but to go through that and come out the other side, so strengthening, so confidence building. Yeah. I have a friend who, I ordained a year and a half ago, and she died just a couple of months ago. She had lots of solitaries in her home. When her family, her husband was away, she'd say, "I'm having a solitary. I'm staying at home, and I don't answer the phone, and I don't meet up with people. I'm just alone at home." And she did that for a long time. I kept saying, you know, you really got to go away, go to a different place that's not familiar, yeah, where you can meet yourself in a different way. A couple of years before she was ordained, she did this, and it was a revelation. Yeah, she didn't know parts of herself where there was fear, yeah, and on this solitary, she met them. And she really came through wonderfully. You know, it's not always fear. It may be other things that we've not looked at or not known about. So solitaries are very, very important in our practice, integrating, assimilating, and taking further what we're learning. Yeah. So what about taking the practice into our daily life then, into our work, into our relationships, into the busyness of the world out there? The first thing is keep your meditation practice going. Just do it. Yeah? And don't worry so much whether it's good or bad, is it worth sitting down, I'm so distracted. Just do it. Yeah? We've learnt here, awareness of distraction. awareness of confusion, awareness of don't feel like it. Yeah? And that's so valuable. Mm-hmm. That is many moments of awareness strengthen the mind, yeah? And they will deepen concentration. So don't underestimate the value of sitting there, being distracted, maybe being tired, but knowing it, being aware. Mm-hmm. And remember walking meditation. We haven't done a lot here, maybe not as much as I might have liked to, but I hope you've had a taste of it. Mm-hmm. The value in walking meditation is because we're moving, it's closer to everyday life. Yeah, when you're moving about, the body is active. Mm-hmm. And that makes this link between your formal sitting meditation and being aware in everyday activities. Mm-hmm. Here, I've not had much time to go for a walk, and that was fine. So I've tried, whenever I've come here, or gone to the shrine room, I've taken the long way around outside the building, haven't gone through the building. Yeah. And that has been my meditative walk. Yeah. Just being outside, air, gazing across the fields, seeing the sky. Yeah. And those were a few moments. And I was going where I needed to go anyway, but I was doing it in a different way. Yeah. So you might like, in your daily life, to find paths you have to go anyway. Could they become mindful paths, mindful walks? Yeah. And in case you hadn't noticed it, you have found a new friend here. Yeah. A new friend in mindfulness. Yeah? So take her with you. Take her back home. Yeah, move in with her. Yeah, get to know her. Mm-hmm. She's very easygoing, places very little demands. Yeah, and she just likes being around you. Yeah? And she's someone you can trust. So instead of trying to be mindful, just remember to be mindful. Yeah? Another friend of mine, she used to put notes in places to remind herself. So on the inside of her front door when she's leaving her flat, she'd have a note, remember to be mindful, you know, or maybe something more specific that she was wanting to be mindful of. She'd put notes in her coat pockets. And of course, forget about them. And then she was on the tube or somewhere and she put her hand in her pocket. Oh, yeah. So it's just being creative and being playful. Mm-hmm. And just to remind you, we had our mindful moments at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day as a way of linking. Yeah? Like one day ends, a new day begins. Yeah? Lying in bed, and just these kindly thoughts. Sending yourself into sleep with some metta thoughts or gratitude. Yeah. And in the early morning, these initial moments, waking up, three breaths, coming into awareness. It's another level of waking up. Yeah. It's like waking up the mind. Yeah. And then just trying to notice your first thought. It's just a matter of practice. And back in your daily life, you know, maybe there are projects waiting for us, things we need to do, people we need to see. It's coming up to Christmas. Maybe that means for you busy time, whatever. Yeah. And that is going to need a different mode of practice. Mm-hmm. So we've got to let go of this mode of practice, taking the essence with us and finding a new way. And it might mean as little as just dropping down into the body now and again, wherever you are. There's no need to change what you're position or stop what you're doing. You just drop down into the body. For example, feeling your feet on the ground. I mean, it's obvious. It's simple. It's not rocket science, but it is so helpful. Notice what you're doing with your arms and hands. You might have a job where you're moving your arms and hands a lot. You don't have to stop work and I've got to be mindful. Yeah, I haven't got time to be mindful. You have, as long as you remember. Yeah, you're doing what you need to do, but you're just aware. Oh, I'm moving my arms. And it's not always necessary in this kind of everyday, with this kind of everyday mindfulness, to be really precise and slow and going into all the sensations. It's not necessary. Yeah? To maintain this thread of awareness, it's enough. Like you touch base, you touch base, you touch base, yeah? As often as you can. You might like to, create some kind of, if you're into systems, a system for yourself or a model, 3 times an hour or whatever. You know, there are these people who pace themselves because of health. They have these little bells. Yeah. They have to stand up then or change posture. What could help you remember to be mindful so that you don't get into a struggle or a fixed idea, I've got to be mindful. Yeah. And then you try. Yeah. And also just a general sense of whole body awareness. Sitting on the train, just posture, am I leaning, am I slumping? None of that's bad or should be different, but you're then present again. The breath, of course, anything, it's always there, but are we there? The breath, the mind, the heart. And it's simply knowing I'm rushing. You'll notice we'll start speeding up now, the pace and some kind of, might not be restlessness, but we'll get faster. And the head's getting fuller of what I've got to do before I leave and all the people I want to talk to and what about the train tomorrow. So that's fine. We need to change gear, but be aware of rushing. Be aware, my head's full. Non-judgmental, that's what's happening right now. And these moments of awareness are like a little alarm, because then you touch base again, what's skillful or necessary or helpful in this moment? What do I need to watch out for? I know if I get under pressure, I can get a bit, with people who are close to me, then I can get a bit sort of short, and snappy. And I've just had to learn, rather than then telling myself off for doing that, then like this awareness bell goes on, now watch out, Prasadavati, you're tired, you're under pressure, just, when you're talking to someone, bear that in mind. And it's really helpful. Take awareness into communication. So aware of others, really listening to other people when they're talking, and not just the me, mine, I story. When it's my turn, what am I going to say? Or what do I think about what she's saying? Or we've already made our minds up about what she's saying. Really listen and let someone finish speaking. You might be familiar with Gregory Kramer's book, Insight Dialogue, where he takes this practice into communication. And the basic tool here is relax, pause, open. So in communication, this is momentary, rather than an endless stream. Pause, relax, and open up again for the communication, for the other person. Gregory Kramer. It's called Insight Dialogue. So the last area with regard to daily life, something I haven't touched on at all, but this is the opportunity that we haven't a practice in Satipatthana, and this is death contemplation. Mm-hmm. It's just aware of impermanence with reference to death, one's own and the death of others. Mm-hmm. And this is not, well, I won't qualify it, I'll just say what I intend to say and then read you a quote. The value of this, just bearing it in mind, yeah, we're not doing corpse contemplation or anything like that, yeah, we're just bearing the truth of impermanence in mind with regard to death. What this does, it helps to clarify one's priorities. We know, taking it more on board, we know it's going to happen one day. Yeah. So let me check my priorities. And am I living in accordance with these priorities? Am I living in alignment with these priorities? What do you really want to do with your life? And are you putting that in place? Yeah. Not procrastinating. Yeah. Not putting your life on hold. And I just want to read you a couple of lines that, these are from Anallio, in an interview when he talked about this practice and the value of it. And it's with regard to relating to other people. So remember, it's death contemplation. How do I relate to others? If I meet you with the certainty that I do not know if you or I are going to live for another meeting, then at this meeting, I want to be fully with you. I want to make the most of this meeting. I want to say what I have to say and learn what I can learn from you at its fullest. Then I become fully alive to this moment with you. And I just think that's incredibly beautiful. And that's the way to live. Bearing death in mind. Doesn't need to be more than that. You know? So it actually, death contemplation actually makes us become much more alive. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter if we meet again, as long as this moment of connecting is as full as we can make it. We're fully present for it. That's what matters. Yeah. And you say what you have to say, I say what I have to say, we learn what we can from one another, and we can part satisfied. Okay, and the last thing I have to say is just to recommend some books to you. And of course there's Bhante's Living with Awareness. You have, or you will, as part of your ordination training, be studying the seven papers. Mm-hmm. And one of them, the first, I think it was the first, in 2009, What is the Western Buddhist Order? Bhante talks about what I teach is basic Buddhism. Yeah, what we are about, we, Triratna, are about, is basic Buddhism. And one of the things he mentions is Satipatthana. Yeah, as being part of basic Buddhism. Yeah. More and more of less and less. Yeah. So it may not have been that this was new, but it's kind of more and more, deeper and deeper of what we know, less and less. It's not about new teachings, higher teachings, but really imbibing them, living them, and realizing them. And Bhante's book, Living with Awareness, you know, there's his depth of knowledge and this far-reaching vision of the Dharma in the world today that really comes out in that book. And when that book was published, there was an order convention, and there was this special offer, two books. The other one was Analio, and one was Bhante's book. Yeah, and I knew I had to have these books, yeah, and I really wanted to buy them. They'd all gone by the time I got there. So it took me then another couple of years to kind of get, yeah, back to that place. Analio's book is the pendant, I think, to Living in Awareness. There's like the clear precision of practice. Yeah. And it's bringing in like a scholarly depth and practical application. Mm-hmm. And then there's a third book which I think is kind of in between these two. And that's Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Awakening. Mm. A few years back, he gave 40 odd talks going through the whole of the Satipatthana Sutta, very, very detailed with regard to practice. Mm-hmm. And this has now been published as a book, and it's just come out in German, this book. Mm-hmm. A Practical Guide to Awakening. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think they are those three substantial books.
Just ask with Anatolia's book, like you've got the most recent one, and I'm confused about which one to get. Do you mean
I think the first one first. He's got three books. So the first one is The Direct Path. Yeah. I'd start with that. Because the next one, Perspectives on Satipatthana, he went back. He's looking at early Buddhism. He goes right to the source. And he went back to Chinese texts. And he compares. That's a comparative study of the Pali Sanskrit early texts. That's excellent, but it's helpful if you've read the first one first, and then next year the practice is coming out, the practice book. And from what he says with the audio guided meditations too, but I think in order to really engage with that, you would need to have read the first book. I mean, I haven't seen the book yet, but just knowing what he's doing, and yeah, I think I'd start with the first, definitely.
What's
yeah.
It called again? Sorry,
the first one, Satipatthana, the Direct Path, or A Direct Path. Yeah. It's in the bookshop, which will be opening soon. There it is. There it is. Aleph, I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got that.
You've got that, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Let's go home and read it.
Yeah. You know, that's something really to study. Bhante's book is very accessible, great to read, because he's got this vision, yeah, that comes out there, and Analio's got the precision of practice. So both together. And then.
It's interesting.
His perspectives is tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Then.